Blog Talk Radio.
This is not a time to get distracted. This is not a time to go off course. This is not a time to lose your focus. Got a word for you for the Lord, and you cannot afford to lose your way. You come too far from where you started, so please don't let the time you stole be wasted on things.
Eloquently Speaking Radio Network. My name is Stacey Lunsford, and we bring you greetings from Life Coach Erica Burnett and our facilitator tonight, We apologize for the inconvenience, but she's running a little late, and that is Apostle Sheila A. Olive. Tonight's topic is eloquently speaking about separation anxiety. And this discussion is going to be dealing with a disorder with children when they become excessively anxious, when they are separated from their parents, their caregivers, or their siblings. It's different scenarios that we will be dealing with tonight. Children are especially prone to separation anxiety during times of stress. Separation anxiety differs from normal clinginess. Children with the disorder can't think about anything but the present fear of separation. They may have nightmares or regular physical complaints. They may be reluctant to go to school or other places. Treatment includes talk therapy and possibly anti-anxiety medications. So I'm going to introduce our co-host, Erica, in one moment. But while we enter into this discussion, it's not solely dedicated to children, because many of the signs and symptoms that we will be discussing, it pertains to teenagers, young adults, and adults as well. Everyone handles anxiety different. And there's like not a guidebook to tell us how to deal with the anxiety, the fear we feel when we're being separated from something or someone that is very important to us. So at this time, I'm going to open up the mic. Hello, Life Coach Erica Burnett. How are you?
Hello, hello, the lovely host, Stacy. I'm great. How are you?
I am doing good. Thank you so much for asking. And what do you have to bring to the table tonight in regards to this topic of separation anxiety?
I did some research on separation anxiety, and it does seem to focus around children for the most part. What I can say is my thought went right to abandonment, because I believe that it may not be the same exact thing, but it's definitely similar. I can see a child or an adult having, but mostly children, it starts at a young age, being abandoned. And when we say abandoned, normally it's like someone who is still living. It's a loss, but the person is still around. They just, you know, disappear from your life, or they left you, but they're still living maybe on another part of, you know, the state, the city where you're living at, or they might be living in another country somewhere or whatever. But that also abandonment causes a traumatic experience. So I believe that abandonment can cause separation anxiety, meaning, you know, if someone leaves your life and they don't want to have anything else to do, you know, to do with you, I believe that can cause a very, very, very traumatic experience. And then on from the child or adult, an adult too as well, can be affected by it greatly. And they can have serious anxiety for many, many, many years, especially if it's not treated. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say about separation anxiety. But like I said, this is my first time being really introduced. I've heard of it maybe some years ago, but never delved into it, you know, until I did the research. So I'm really looking forward to hearing some more about it, to learn some more, and then hopefully add to.
Well, I'm excited too, and we're just going to keep flowing until Apostle Sheila shows up, so that we can really, because she was supposed to be the facilitator for tonight. Mm-hmm. So there are there are three categories when it comes to separation anxiety, the different stages. There are three categories, and the information that I am sharing, it is from Nested Being, an article when I was doing my research. And it really does a wonderful job, Erica, with breaking down the different stages for infants to toddlers and to preschool. And while I was reading, it just made me think about when I first became a mother, because my baby was so used to me being close to him. And like when you're nursing, there's a certain level of intimacy that is formed between you and your child. And so during those moments where I wasn't like right there, the anxiety, like crying, looking around, reaching, like, where are you, Mom? And I never really paid that much attention to it until, you know, this topic came up. And so realizing that as a, you know, a newborn, like growing to that toddler stage and then going to preschool, I think the anxiety separation was more me than it was the preschool. Because I was so, you know, I spent that quality time with my child, with my baby. And, you know, growing from an infant to a toddler to preschool, and now they're ready to go to school, I wasn't ready to let go. And I went through some emotional anguish and even torment, because how are they going to treat my baby? How are they going to, you know, differentiate the different cries that he has? And what am I going to do when I feel overwhelmed because I'm missing him, or I, you know, so it works both ways. And, you know, I'm always thinking outside of the box. So I was like, well, I'm going to share how I felt anxiety separation from, you know, that transitional period where we both learn, the mother and child learns how to be apart from their parents. And this is an interesting topic, because when you have a mom and a dad that's present, then all three, you know, go through that process. So for the infant stage, this particular article by Nested Being, I believe in giving credit where credit is due, it says what separation looks like at this age. And it says for infants, it usually shows up around 9 months of age, but can start as early as 4 or 5 months. And it can be worse if a child is hungry, tired, etc. And as a toddler, it is their, as their independence develops, so increases their resistance to separation. They are louder, more tearful, and more difficult to stop. Now, with the preschool level, it says, at this age, children clearly understand they can affect us by how they act. They will be persistent to get the parent to change, take longer to leave, or come back if they hear crying. And out of all three of those categories, the preschool category stood out to me the most. And I don't know how it affected you, Erica, but I see a classic case of manipulation. So some anxiety separation, it is real. You know, children as well as parents go through that, you know, everything associated with that separation. But that's where those preschoolers start to play you like a violin. Oh, Mommy feeling a certain way because I'm in preschool now and she's going to miss me. And every time I cry, she come and get me, or she do what I want. You see what I'm saying? So
Absolutely. They
really, and as toddlers, they learn how to be manipulators. And so as they grow, they perfect being manipulators. And if it's not nipped in the bud, you know, they grow into adults learning how to be manipulators. Well, if I cried and my mom came, well, I know I'm not a little, you know, preschooler anymore, but if I cry, maybe my girl will come give me a little bit more attention. Or if it's a girl, you know, if I just cry and act like something is wrong, maybe he'll come and give me more attention than he's giving me now. So, you know, games people play by the spinners. Right or wrong, it just don't matter.
Mm-hmm. It,
when a child knows that they can manipulate you, they are going to try and manipulate you. But with it, with all of these stages, children are going to be children. And I believe that when a child is being nurtured in love and when that child is being cultivated, cared for, they are going to feel a certain way when any of those categories stop. And like you said earlier, associating it with abandonment, they're going to feel abandoned. They're going to feel rejected. But when that parent comes in and they give them that attention, or whether it's the caregiver or a sibling, then it gives them a little bit more comfort. Excuse me. So out of the things that I just shared with those three examples, the normal separation anxiety by age, is there anything you want to contribute to that?
Oh, yeah, the one you said, what, before preschool, was that it, that one?
Yes.
That one right there? Oh, yeah, that they learn how to work the parents. They learn how to work the babysitters and the aunts and the uncles. They know how to work everybody by then. It's amazing how quickly children pick up on certain things. And everyone thinks, oh, that's a baby. They don't know. They have no idea. Oh, yes, they do. Yes, they do. They pick up on behavior from mom, dad, and everybody else in the room because they sit there and they don't have any other, you know, thing to do but to watch. They eat, they watch, they go to the bathroom, and they sleep. Those four things. So all they do is watch everybody. So it's easy to learn the behaviors of the people around you when all you have to do is sit back and you just look around the room. If you look at a child and you look at a baby, they just look around. They look at the lights. They look at the people. They listen to the words and the actions and things. So that one right there, the manipulation part, oh, yeah. Because like I said, I don't have, you know, chick nor child at all. I did have a hand in raising some of my cousins at a young age when I was still in like middle school. I did a lot of babysitting and baby watching and waking up in the middle of the night and when mothers were bedridden. So I was up, you know, feeding babies, crying and changing pampers, all of that stuff. So I have lots of nieces and nephews, almost about 20 nieces and nephews.
Oh,
so
wow.
My brother and sister is busy. They're busy. But, yeah, so I can see that, and that's interesting about the manipulation because they do, they learn it. They cry, and they see who's on the come. But my question is, how does a parent, and I don't want to get off the subject, but how does a parent balance that out so the child does not think that, you know, so they don't develop separation anxiety? How do they balance that out evenly to say, okay, let the child know that they're loved and I'm not gone, you know, versus being away too long so they believe that the parent is not coming back? And that's got to be hard for the parent because they got to be well aware of what's going on at all times.
And it's really hard because it's trial and error. How you start the beginning foundation when that child is an infant and how you interact, how you give in to that child. And it's a difference between really just nurturing, loving, taking care of your child and then giving in to their every little cry and every little whim. Like, you can't do that. Sometimes they need to cry so they can stretch their lungs, you know. It helps them to grow. So as they grow from infant to toddler to preschool, if you're totally catering to them all of the time, you're enabling them to manipulate you. You're enabling them to cause you to feel the anxiety and the separation. And, you know, I'm going to say manipulation throughout this discussion because that's what they do.
Exactly.
And some of them don't, some of them realize it and some of them don't realize it. But once they do realize it, it's like, hey, that's why when you go to the market, whether it's a white woman or a black woman or a Spanish woman or an Asian woman, when that parent or that mother or that father are not establishing healthy boundaries, that child is going to scream. That child is going to fall all out on the floor in the aisle where the cookies and the chips are, and they're going to give in to them because you know what? They don't want them to have the temper tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want everybody looking at them like they're crazy when they need to correct the child and say, stop, you're not going to do that. I'm not going to do, you know, I'm not going to give you what you want. And, you know, we have to learn how to say no and love.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
mm-hmm.
hard because when they little and lovable like that, like, hey, you just want to love them up and make them happy. And we can do that, but we can also do it in a way where we share disciplinary actions that will help them develop into a much more mature person where they can interact with people without manipulating or without creating scenarios like having tantrums or getting upset just to get their way. So that's my two cents.
That's a good point.
Well, thank you very much. And at this time, we're going to turn the mic over to our facilitator, Apostle Sheila A. Olive is with us. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, Erica. Hey, Stacy.
Hey,
Happy
Nan.
Friday.
Hey, hey.
Hope you guys had a good week. I know, Stacy, we're loving up on you real good this week. And I just appreciate the points that you guys brought up. And another point I wanted to focus on was the vast numbers of people who are affected by separation anxiety. It's not only children, but adults can be affected by it as well. And in specific, I want to focus on right now older adults who are displaced because of not having caretakers, who have moved to facilities, sometimes the disassociation from things that are familiar with them can cause fight or flight syndrome, can cause aggression, such as people with Alzheimer's or dementia who have to be placed in assisted living facilities, no longer have the comforts, the creature comforts of their homes that they're used to, the things that are familiar to them. It can cause separation anxiety, which can breed a form of aggression in their personalities, a change in their personalities, and also cause them to try to leave those facilities. And as well as, let's bring up another point, separation anxiety can be personified in animals as well. If you have a dog or cat, we know that all during COVID, we were home almost 3 years. We were home, encapsulated in our homes, and those of us who had pets, you know, became real used to us being at home. And then when things, you know, started to change and started to get better over the past 6 to 9 months, and it was time for people to go back to work, I know some friends of mine who had some problems with their animals because they were no longer constantly in the homes with the animals. So there was some separation anxiety displayed by the animals. So This disorder, I know we've been talking about mental health disorders a lot over the past few months, over the past several months. But this disorder, I know you identified it as a form of manipulation, and it stems from fear. Anytime we hear the word anxiety, the root cause of anxiety is fear. And we know the Bible says fear hath torment. So this disorder breeds torment in the person or however it personifies, whether it's a child, whether it's an adult, or whether it's an animal. That person, child, or animal literally has an overwhelming fear of being alone, of being away from that thing, person, or place that brings it comfort. And so it could have been the loss. It could come from loss also. It could come through divorce, moving from one place to another. I know that when I was younger, when I was in the eighth grade, and, you know, when you've gone through school in one particular school from first to eighth grade, you become so familiar with all of the people you're around. It becomes like an extended family. So this particular school I was in, I went from first through the eighth grade, but in the middle of the eighth grade, my parents decided they wanted to move to the suburbs. We lived in the city. And so my whole support system, you know, all of my friends that I grew up with, that I was getting ready to prepare to graduate with, I had to be disrupted, uprooted from that support system and moved into a new environment where, you know, I was like the little fish in the big pond then. And so it was tough navigating through that last and most crucial school year of elementary school to then go into a new high school environment where I literally didn't know almost anyone. So moving, relocating can have a great play a great part in separation anxiety manifesting itself in our lives. You know, I was earlier on today, I was watching the news and I was listening to the news reports about the fires in Hawaii and thinking about these people and how traumatized they must be and devastated they must be over the fact that they literally lost everything and now they'll be unable to return to a place that has been so familiar to them, such a comfort. Many of the people were saying that they were so secure in their environment that they didn't even lock their doors in their neighborhoods. Well, now all of that is gone, and they not only have to relocate, but they have to be disassociated with their security, their secure environment, their secure neighborhoods, their support systems of their neighbors and family and friends. But that now they've got to move away from that place because it's no longer safe, it's no longer secure, and everything there has been lost. So separation anxiety sometimes can be associated with a severe or extreme form of trauma that's been inflicted upon us. So let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about how, as an adult, separation anxiety affects us or has affected us. I know that early on in your discussion, you were talking about the bonding of babies to their parents and moving into preschool and how that separation affects us. But let's talk about a little bit as we get older, how this disorder can affect us in our adulthood. Has either of you had a severe trauma, an extreme trauma that's affected you, that's caused separation anxiety? How about you, Erica?
I would say, okay, I don't want to say it didn't, I don't think it caused separation anxiety. I think it just increased my abandonment issues to a certain degree, but I'll tell you. During COVID, I want to say, like right in the middle of it, my father called me and he says that I don't think we should talk anymore. And I said, okay, you know, what's why? I mean, can I say anything? And he said, no. He said, you don't call me anymore, and I won't call you anymore. And that was the end of it, end of the conversation, and he hung up. Well, now, mind you, my father was not in my, he was in and out of my life for my entire, since I was born, basically. And we had started to develop a relationship as I got older, like in my early 20s. You know, we had a really good relationship. We started to bond. And then when I went to get married and finally actually got married, our relationship changed, where he was more, he communicated more with my ex-husband than he did with me. So he was just up and down and all over the place, you know, my whole entire life, he was like that. So even with that, him telling me that we should not talk anymore, and that was it, cut like a knife. So all it did was just deepen the issues that I was working through, you know, to get over, which was abandonment issues, which abandonment, like I said, it's not the same as, you know, it's not the same as separation anxiety. It can cause it, though. I believe that abandonment can cause it. So it's relatable. But I can't say that it did that, and it might be because I was already in a process of working through. So that was just one more thing that I needed to address in already in my process. I already had like a counselor that I was talking to about to get through all those issues and stuff like that. So I think at that point I was a little better equipped, even though it still hurt. It hurt my heart, cut like a knife. Even though he wasn't there, it's still because, you know, that's my father, my parent. So it was devastating. At the least, it was really devastating. And it could have caused it, but it didn't cause that. It's just one more thing that I had to get over, but it wasn't where I was, you know, in fear of.
Hello?
You know, hello? Oh, you know, I wasn't in, you know, fear of anything, so it wasn't too traumatic, but it was devastating.
Right. Well, that can certainly create a sense of separation because the relationship was just cut off. And you're right, it probably did trigger old issues of abandonment you had. Because like you said, your father was not a staple in your life, but merely went in and out. And then to call and say, well, we're just not going, going to communicate anymore with no explanation. I'm sure it left you with questions and even some fear, and, you know, but that can be pretty devastating, the loss of a friend, a relative, without any explanation, whether it be through physical loss, death. That's a form of separation. Divorce is a form of separation. You know, when we're married, the two become one. So when you're divorced, in the spirit, there is a tearing, a separation, a ripping apart of, you know, if you glue two things together and you then take them and break them apart, there's going to be some evidence that there was brokenness where those things were joined together. So judging by what you said, yes, it could have created separation anxiety, but I'm glad it didn't in your life, because you knew how to trace your trigger. You knew how to go back to and find the feeling, identify the feeling, and then overcome the feeling that before they actually overcame you. So that's great, Erica. Thank you for sharing.
I'm doing good. I'm just listening. Interesting topic. Even though you wasn't here in the beginning when we opened up, and I said, although we're dealing with children with separation anxiety, we're going to be dealing with, you know, the different categories of the ages. And so when you said that, you just kind of chimed right in and kind of took us back for a refresher for what we was setting the platform for tonight.
Okay,
this topic is very dear to my heart tonight, because, as you all know, my mother passed on August the 8th, and the whole grieving process, I started that early because I knew that God was transitioning her. And I don't care how much I was prepared for her to go home to glory, there is some residual stuff there kind of hanging around that I didn't expect to experience this week. And when I woke up in the middle of the night that she passed, because I was so tired and I thought I would just sleep through the night, but I woke up, and in my heart, I wanted to go check on her to see if she was okay, if I needed to change her. And in that moment, it was like, she's not here. And so I just sat there in disbelief, like, this is really real. My mom is not here. And so those feelings, like, I wasn't going to do the show tonight because I didn't want to be crying. But then I thought about all of our topics where we've been talking about taking off the mask and, you know, what's hiding under your mask. So I didn't want to hide. I said, I'm going to be a trooper, because somebody is going to listen tonight and they're going to hear my testimony. And it's going to give them the courage to feel the way they feel, take ownership of how they feel, stand accountable for how they feel, and understand that it's okay, that it's a healthy thing, and it's part of the process. So I'm currently dealing with the anxiety separation of not having my mom here with me physically. But then I have the joy and the excitement and just the celebratory praise, hallelujah, of knowing that my mom is right here with me. And the word tells us to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. And so I know she's with God. I know that I'm going to see her again. But you know what? Right now, I feel emotional numbness at different times. And then at different times, I don't. I just feel like emotionally strong. So all of this is a part of anxiety, and anxiety connecting that with grieving the loss of a loved one. And it's no different than, you know, when we look at Columbine High and some of these other schools where teachers, staff, and other students have been murdered, you know, unfortunately. And when you think about the anxiety, because that's a trauma, right? That's a serious trauma. And the first thing they do is set up all of these trauma stations for the parents, for the students, for the teachers, for the administrators. And it all goes well. You know, some people go and they talk and they don't talk. Some people go and they cry. And whatever they need to do to get that relief you need in that moment, it helps. But eventually, they have to go back to that classroom. And so the story I just shared where I woke up in the middle of the night, my first reaction was to go check on my mom. So these children, and this is a serious prayer point for us, so now these children that was witnesses to these murders that took place in these schools, and even like as I'm talking, the Holy Spirit is speaking to me, even with the marathon in Boston when, you know, that bomb went off and all of those people got hurt, at one point or another, they had to deal with that trauma. They had to deal with the reality of how that trauma made them feel. But when they went back to that place, whether it was on the corner where that race they was running, and for these children or the teachers or the administrators in the classroom, once they get there, they're going to find themselves in the same situation as me. But it's not going to be looking for my mother. They're going to be looking for their classmates. And you know what? Then we're going to deal with the intense emotional pain of anxiety separation, because that girl used to be a heck of a cheerleader. I'm never going to see her again. Or that football player, I love seeing him get that touchdown. And so we deal with feelings of bitterness, feelings of anger, feelings of sorrow. And we have to understand that it's okay to feel that way, but not to stay there. And so for me, do I feel bitter about, you know, this separation anxiety? No, I don't, because I'm happy that my mom transitioned, and I'm even grateful how it connected in with our topic tonight. And ultimately, I know that as I continue to cast my cares upon God, that not only is he going to strengthen me, but he's also going to give me a strategy for not staying stuck in that place, because Apostle Sheila, it could easily turn into depression. Yes. And so I'm real mindful to feel what I feel, to express what I feel. And you ladies have been so supportive to me, and I haven't had a chance to reach out to you yet, but I'm definitely going to. And so I just, this last thing I want to say, for those of you that are listening, and maybe you didn't know that my mother passed, it was a very difficult process to see her transition the way she did. And I am so grateful that I was there. But when you have a loved one and you're part of the process, and you know that eventually they're going, you're going to feel some separation anxiety. You're going to feel a wide variety of topics. And even as Erica and I was talking about the different stages from that infant to the toddler and then to the preschool, some of our feelings are going to fall right in all of those categories, because you may feel infantile feelings. You may feel preschool feelings. You may feel toddler feelings. And it doesn't matter. The thing is to deal with whatever feeling you have. Do not be ashamed. Do not be humiliated. But just allow that feeling and that emotion to mature you in that process of your anxiety separation. So thank you for a great question.
thank you for being transparent with your feelings and your experience. I lost my dad in November of last year, and, you know, it was sudden. And so even though we had a week, he had a heart attack, and it was a week before he ultimately succumbed to the effects of the heart attack. But here's a man who, he was the person who fixed things, and he, you know, we could not fix that for him. And so there was, you're right, grief and the anxiety of the sudden separation from a loved one in that manner. It comes in waves. You do feel a sense of strength at times when you think about the memories and times past, and then it can, that almost instantly can turn into a time of, you know, just emptiness, a longing, a deep sorrow. And so, and it does go, it goes in waves, and it does seem overwhelming at times. I know in the beginning, I was just like you. I was numb. I had no feeling, no emotion. But when my emotional gate did open, it was a full-fledged flood. And I had to deal with that. I preferred to deal with that on my own because I knew what I was feeling, why I was feeling it. And so I needed to just put all of my emotional cards on the table so that I could sort them out and put them in their proper place. And sometimes as an adult, when we're dealing with separation anxiety, it helps us to be able to, you know, write out. I oftentimes talk about journaling, how important journaling is, how important putting your feelings and your emotions down on paper to help you to sort out the emotional disarray that goes on in our minds and in our souls, which is the house of our emotions, our imagination. And so once we are able to write those things down or physically look at them, it helps us to walk through our process. So it did help me kind of to write some things down, to get them out of my head and away from my emotions, away from my imagination. It helped me to move into my grieving process, because grief is, you know, nobody can tell you how to grieve. You grieve at your own speed, your own pace, and your own duration. And it is, does border on, fall into, the category of separation anxiety. So I do appreciate your transparency. We do appreciate you being here tonight. I know that, it's taking a lot for you to be here. And so we want to surround you with love and with prayers and with support. And those of you who are on the line who are callers, we just want to encourage you to take heed to the things that we're sharing about separation anxiety, whether of whatever level, whatever form it has manifested in your life, whether it's with a child, whether it's with a senior adult, whether it's with an animal, a pet. You know, what we're saying here, as we've said in the past few months, we're giving you tools. This is something that affects 10% of our population. In my research, is that 10% of our population suffers from separation anxiety. So that means 10 people out of every 100 in a crowd is suffering some form of separation anxiety. And typically it's triggered from a trauma or a traumatic experience. But, you know, we are here to support you, to uphold you, to undergird you, to help you to move forward. And through this process, separation anxiety does not have to be a debilitating process. It could be, it is treatable. It is treatable. It is treatable through therapy. Sometimes you're prescribed anti-anxiety medication. We don't always want medication to be our first and foremost, answer, because there are other things we've talked about over the past few months that you can do to help to calm your anxiety, especially when it's separation anxiety. I know one of my grandchildren suffered from separation anxiety due to, his mom not being in his life early on. So he was with me, and if I would leave the room, he would cry out, instantly, "Mom, where are you? Grandma, where are you?" Because that bonding, it's very important. Once that bonding happens in any form of a relationship, and that bonding is broken, then that it gives opportunity for the anxiety of separation to be formed. So we are here to support you in your process. I don't know, Stacy, if there are any callers waiting in the queue who'd like to share anything, but we are here to support our callers with tools, with applications, and with love and with prayer to help them through their process.
Yes, and we do not have any callers tonight. I mean, we got people are on the line, but nobody has a question right now.
Okay. Well, if you do have a question, if you would like to interject with comments or an experience that you've had or something that you've done to help you to overcome separation anxiety, just press 1 and Stacy can see that and she can open your line and you'd be able to share with us. And we've had over the past couple of weeks some really wonderful stories, some really wonderful supporters who have been on our line, who've shared some things that have really helped. Not only we've been able to help them, they've been able to help us. So please don't ever think what you have to say may be insignificant. We want to and need to hear from you. So if you'd like to share, please press the number 1, and Stacy will be able to see that, and we'll open your line so that you can share with us. But let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about separation in adult relationships, adult love relationships. Now, I've been divorced. I don't hide that. And divorce for me did create a great deal of separation anxiety in my life. My divorce was sudden. It was sort of like Erica. It was sort of like you. It was like, I don't want to talk to you anymore. I'm just leaving. I'm done, and that's it. And so there was just a severe cutting off of that relationship that left me questioning, that left me, you know, looking for answers, kind of groping in the dark kind of thing. So let's talk a little bit about that and, you know, how separation anxiety can develop in our lives through adult love relationships once they have ended or ended suddenly due to tragic circumstances. Erica?
Yes, ma'am. I am a divorcee. I've been divorced going on 8 years, and it'll be 8 years in October. When I got divorced, it kind of was sudden, but it wasn't at the same time. I say that because I really honestly did not think about it. I went through the grieving process before I even said or even knew that I wanted to be divorced. I grieved at least, I want to say, 6 months to a year before divorce even hit my mind or hit my mouth to say it, because I did not know what I was going through. I had no clue. I just know I had feelings of abandonment, of being left alone in a relationship. I felt as though I was the only one working towards anything. So I just started to grieve. I felt like I was by myself while I was divorced, you know, while I was married. So I went through the whole process before I said, okay, I want a divorce. One day it just came right on out. I had no pre-thought. It just came out. And I even shocked myself, but I knew that it was time to go at that point. It was very, very traumatic in that even after I said it, because once my husband had left the house and I was alone, it felt like a weight was lifted. At the same time, I became fearful that I would never ever in life be married again, that I would always be by myself, that nobody wanted me, you know, because, you know, I've been just, you know, basically just, even though I said I want a divorce, I felt like I've been discarded. I felt that I was being punished by God. Why everybody else got a man and I ain't got one? You know what I mean? So I just went through, it was hard. It was hard to deal with for the first, I want to say, 3 to 4 years. And then my faith and everything with God, my relationship started to build itself. And my focus turned from a relationship to my purpose in life. Why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing? And I had to come to that conclusion because I knew that I did not have a direct effect on me. And that's worded all wrong, but I know I didn't have any control over being in a relationship, being in the right relationship or finding the right person for me. I know that is not within my control. That's in God's control and due timing. So I learned how to focus on, you know, myself, get myself better mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, and focusing on what God wanted me to do, you know, with my life, why he created me. So I started to focus on that. But for that first 3 to 4 years, it was a hot mess. I was a hot mess. It was not good. I went through a really ugly period of being sad and depressed and fearful that I would never, ever in life find anybody or nobody would find me. So that it's no joke. It's no joke. And I came to the realization that I had my mom to talk to. I had my girlfriend to talk to, and I had a counselor. So I had people who were there, you know, to kind of help me through that, which is good. And I think anybody should, when going through the process of something that's very traumatic and, you know, separation anxiety, and when you're separating from somebody, because divorce is very traumatic, and people, I don't think a lot of people understand how traumatic it is. Because even though you're divorced, the person, especially if the person is still living, meaning you could see them the day or tomorrow, and almost everything that you've been through is capable of just coming back to your brain again and causing you more of the same trauma that you've been through. So it's a very, very deep and saddening and traumatic experience. And like Apostle Sheila mentioned, it's spiritual, because you are bonded for so many years or so much time, and then you just take and you just separate the two spirits who have been cohabitating for so many years, and now you are separating the two. It is very stressful, very painful to the heart, mind, and spirit, and it's a lot to deal with. So definitely anybody, please go and see, you know, family and loved ones are a good source to talk to, but I advise you to actually go and speak with a professional to help you work through those issues, because I definitely did, along with my loved ones. So I needed full support to help myself get through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very important you have a support system when you're going through that phase in life. You know, a lot of people say when they're going through a divorce, oh, I'm okay, I'm great, I'm, you know, like you said, a weight is lifted off, I'm moving into a new phase in my life, but still and all, there are residual emotions that kind of come up, because it is a separation, and you do, like you identify, you do grieve.
Mm-hmm.
There is a sense of grief because there is a loss of a hope or dream. You know, that was at one time your purpose in life, to be with that person. So, and now that is no longer so your purpose, and the two are now one. So oftentimes people have trouble transitioning from being in a marriage relationship to being a single person, again, especially if the people are older in life. A lot of times when people have been married 30, 40 years and they find themselves being divorced, they find it really difficult to transition into a single life. And sometimes we hear about stories about women who have never worked, which is, you know, that's okay. But these women who have never worked, and then they find themselves being divorced, having to be thrusted into the workforce to find jobs, to be able to support themselves and their well-being, are not able to sustain the lifestyle to which they had become accustomed to when they were married, and end up being depressed because things are just different. Things are just different. And so, yes, it's important that you do seek therapy. You do have a support system. Find a counselor to help during that transition process, because it is a process. It is a rebuilding of your life after divorce. Stacy, you have anything you want to share?
What was the question?
We were talking about divorce and how it can bring stresses of separation, anxiety, how divorce can be a form of a grieving process. Has that, have you, we were talking about the separation in love relationship, when a love relationship comes to an abrupt end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have you experienced that? What were your experiences? Was there a form of separation anxiety that manifested in your life, or if it was a divorce, a loss of a loved one, but having a being in a relationship, how did that the end of that relationship, how did that affect you, and was there a form of separation anxiety?
Oh, definitely. There was a lot of anxiety. I was engaged to get married in 96, and we was doing premarital counseling, family counseling, because we were blending families. And he ended up leaving me in the middle of premarital counseling. And I mean, everything was paid for, and for another woman. And it would have been so much easy for him to just say, hey, you know, I really don't want to go forward with this. I don't want to hurt you. And it didn't happen that way. And sometimes people make decisions and they don't think about the people around them that their actions directly affect. So in order to properly answer your question, I have to deal with how it affected the children first. Because we were a unit. We had a mom, we had a dad, and we're working, we're doing all of these exercises. We're learning how to express our real feelings without getting angry and learning how to share our parents, you know, all of that stuff that comes along with it. And then to have something so traumatic happen that broke up our family. And that was very hard because I was the one taking everyone to school because of our, you know, the work schedules and stuff. And we didn't live together. So that made it a little bit challenging. But sometimes, you know, the children would stay over with me because of overwork, I mean, overtime schedules and things like that. But they got used to being with me. They got used to me taking them to school. They got used to me picking them up. And so now, what do we do? How now mothering, cultivating, nurturing your own children is one thing. And when you go above and beyond and you apply those same principles to children that you did not birth, naturally those children fall in love with you. And it doesn't matter that you didn't birth them. They still feel the same emotions that come along with anxiety separation. So, you know, when am I going to see you? When am I going to see my siblings? Like, I'm really feeling a certain way right now. So I really had to pray for them and pray for their understanding of what happened and not to, the biggest thing was, hey, it's not your fault. And this gap that's taking place right now in our family, you're not responsible for that. So don't let that affect your academics. Don't allow that to make you feel guilty, like it's your fault. Nothing was your fault. So, you know, just really being proactive with trying to help them overcome. But then, like the youngest one, she always clung to me anyway. So that was really, really traumatic to her. And so I had to really, it was hard. It was hard because, one, these are my babies, and I was preparing for a life with them, to be with them forever and watch them graduate college, eventually get boyfriends and girlfriends and get married and give me all of these grandchildren. But you know what? Instead, there was anxiety separation, and sometimes different children, it affected their developmental process. It affected their behavior. you know, nightmares, fears of loneliness. And so all of that stuff, Erica and Apostle Sheila, it broke my heart. So now let's talk about how it affected me. It broke my heart. And we cannot have these kind of discussions without talking about recurrent memories and flashbacks and remembering how it used to be. You know, the song says, memories on the corner of my mind, misty watercolored memories. The memories are going to be there, but we have to learn how to train our brain to not stay stuck in a situation that we have no control over. So I went to counseling. We was already in premarital counseling, so now I'm in single counseling. And in single counseling, I'm smiling, I learned how to deal with the anxiety separation and all that, the children. Now, the children was feeling like it was something they did, but I was feeling responsible for all of their inadequacies, all of their self-doubt, all of, like, they believed in family again. After being tormented and terrorized from all of the trauma from their mother, you know, and their father, because once their marriage broke up, it destroyed their family. So now we're looking at a double dose of anxiety separation. So I earned their trust, and now they feel comfortable enough to even relate to me as their mom. And now this situation happens. They want to be with me and don't want to be with their father, and I cannot take them because I'm not their biological mother. So can you imagine the distress, the disappointment, the feelings of rejections and abandonment, because they felt like I abandoned them. And they held me responsible for something that I had no control over. And then he wouldn't allow me to see them. So I felt like he stole my babies. I felt like there was a hole in my heart. And there was different times where I had a hard time sleeping. And as far as he goes, you know, it took some time, but I had to learn how to let go and understand that this, and I'm thankful that we did premarital counseling, because through that whole process, I learned that he really wasn't the one for me. So God really spared me and saved my life by not allowing me to marry him. And I think about what could have happened if I did marry him, and just how miserable my life would really be. So the separation anxiety, it caused a little doubt. It caused a little bit of trust issues. Nobody likes to feel rejected. Nobody likes to feel abandoned. Nobody likes to experience loneliness. But as an adult, we tend to handle it a little different. I'm not going to say better, but as adults, we tend to handle it a little different than children do. And we also tend to hide behind our feelings and our emotions. And for those of you that know me, you know, I'm very transparent. I share my stuff because I overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of my testimony. But when we're dealing with traumatic experiences in relationships that go wrong, there's strong anxiety, separation anxiety, and especially if it is a codependent relationship and that person is totally dependent on the person that decides to up and leave. And so in our situation where we have 5 children and we blend in a family, it was very difficult when he decided to up and leave, because when he did, it affected 5 people. So I would just like to say to anybody that is listening, if you are in a relationship, or if you are in or coming out of an abusive relationship, or a relationship where you're no longer growing, you're bored, you're stagnant, you reached your plateau in that relationship, but you're staying maybe because of the kids, or you're staying because you don't want to hurt the person and you don't want them to experience separation anxiety, please be honest with them so that they can be honest with what they feel and face their feelings, face their fears with a spirit of great expectancy, knowing that they're going to overcome and that they will rise above their circumstances and situations, because it's easier to be set free when you release a person. And what I mean by that is by releasing them by being honest. Hey, I don't love you anymore. I don't think this relationship could really work. It's nothing wrong with saying that. Why cause unnecessary stress? Why cause another person to experience a deeper level of hurt and pain when at one time they was important to you? You treasured that person. You honored that person. So I believe, Erica and Apostle, when a relationship is over, I don't care how bad it got, something good brought the two of you together, and it should end in a spirit of peace, love, and joy. Right. But it doesn't always happen that way. So that's
absolutely
my
true. That's absolutely true, especially when you have multiple people, multiple age groups, multiple families, like you identify in your situation. It does not always end well. And sometimes the person who created the scenario doesn't think, have any thought about the fact that this is going to affect everyone. It doesn't just affect me, the person who, okay, I don't want to be in this relationship anymore, but there is my significant other, there are the children involved, there are the other family members involved. So it's a multi-level separation. It's a multi-level distress that happens when a relationship is suddenly and abruptly brought to an end. And like you said, it's a thin line between love and hate. And oftentimes when a relationship is being dissolved, it's not done in an amicable manner. And so there are traumatic emotions, volatility involved in the separation of that relationship that could bring on separation anxiety and trauma. And so it's best, like you said, when it's over, and just walk away. You know, just pick up your little bags and walk away, and don't try to hurt the other person. Just leave, and leave with everything intact. Leave everything intact. Not try to disrupt everybody's life. So yeah, that's. I thank you for sharing that, Stacy. That was that happens now more than we know. Especially when we are joining multiple families, spouses or fiancés who have children, and they bond. Remember, we were talking about earlier in our conversation, there's that word again, the bonding that happens. Those children bonded to you, and they began to feel secure, and they began to feel safe again. And then all of a sudden, the rug is pulled out from under them, and then their security system is disrupted again. And that creates a form of trauma in their life. So now they have to recover again, and those feelings can sometimes be carried with them from children into their adult life if it's not dealt with. And then with them being children, they don't even understand what's happening in the adult part of the relationship because they're not privy to that. They don't know the who, what, when, where, and why of it all. All they know is this person that I love is no longer in my life. So it's important to sit down. If you find, you know, any callers who are in the midst of that type of situation, it's important that you sit down and talk, at least talk to the children and try to talk to them on their level and give them some sense of understanding as to what's happening and how to help them to transition. It, again, there's another buzzword from tonight, transitioning from the life and the security that they once knew into something that might look totally different. But I just want to take a minute to just thank all of our listeners for listening in on tonight, because this subject has far-reaching implications. You know, not everyone wants to even identify, even admit that they're going through separation anxiety or experiencing separation anxiety. So, you know, for those people who are listening who've experienced this, who have gone through it, come out of it, you know, if you have something that you'd like to share, just press the number one and we'll be able to see and recognize you and identify you and open your mic. And we like for people to be able to share because everybody's experience is important and we learn from each other. We learn from each other. I wanted to share some points on how to survive separation anxiety. These are some points to help you to overcome it, to survive it, and to get through it. Create a quick goodbye ritual. That means, like Stacy was saying, you know, when it's over, let it be over. Don't drag it out. Don't put the needle back on the record. Just let it be done. So let it be written. So let it be done. You know, be consistent in your life. Be consistent. When separating, give children your full attention by being loving and providing affection, because separation can be traumatic. And so the way to help them to transition is give them the proper love and attention and conversation. Communication is important. Keep your promises. Don't be a promise breaker. Keep your promises. If you've made promises, then do what you say you were going to do. Be specific. These are relating to children who are experiencing separation anxiety. You know, when you're communicating with them and about them, communicate with them and about them on their level. And be supportive when you're apart. So when you're apart and you come back together, be supportive with the children. Let them know that, okay, you know what, I missed you while you were away. I want to let you know that what an impact being apart from you had on me as an adult. Children need to know as an adult how we feel. when we're apart. Earlier on, Stacy was talking about the preschool and how when children first go into preschool, I remember, you know, years and years and years ago when my children went to preschool, I remember the exact day and time and what they looked like and, you know, what their experience was like going in to those first days of preschool. Well, you know, one of my daughters, she had long pigtails, and I remember her bopping into the school, and her teacher, her looking back, and her teacher wanting to reassure me, and she kind of put her hand up and nodded her head at me to let me know she's going to be just fine. But and I was, you know, stressed out all day. Having my children grow up in a military household, we moved around a lot. And so I was stressed out all day from just knowing that, you know, she was in her first day of preschool. Couldn't wait to pick her up. And when she came out, you know, with her artwork and her little book bag and, you know, her little ponytails bopping around and then running up to me and reassuring me, "Mom, I had a great day today." And I said, I looked at her and I told her I didn't want to, you know, upset her, but "Oh, I missed you," you know, getting emotional. I looked at her in the eyes and I told her, "Well, you know what? I had a great day today too." And she smiled. And so that reassurance helped to bridge the gap and helped to make a way for her not to feel like, "Oh, well, you know, I've been with my mom all this time. Now I don't want to make her upset by saying I didn't have a good day or something like that." So it's important to have those times of communication when there's separation or transitioning from separation into a new lifestyle in order to help that transition be easier. Do you ladies agree?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, it's really important. There were there's some long-term effects if we don't address the anxiety associated with separation. We had talked about some weeks ago how different forms of anxiety can progress and become crippling and debilitating. Separation anxiety is just kind of like the tip of the iceberg when we talk about some of the anxieties and phobias that we've addressed over the past few weeks. But if those tip of the iceberg disorders aren't addressed, they can become debilitating phobias. So that's why we're encouraging you to seek out therapy, to seek out counseling, and if at all possible, if it comes to where the medical provider prescribes medication, be consistent with taking the medication because that will help to defray some of the symptoms of the anxiety you may be experiencing. But above all, seek a good counselor, a good therapist, to help you to navigate through the process. Erica and I all typically say sometimes, you know, as counselors, we have counselors. counselors have counselors, and it's important. From whoever you are, whatever level you're on, whatever title you may hold, know your own needs, know your own self, and support yourself emotionally. In that, if you feel unstable emotionally, if you feel fearful or fretful, or you feel like you're going through separation anxiety, seek help. Seek help. It's important. I can't stress it enough, the importance of having someone to undergird you. Erica is a certified life coach. Talk to us a little bit, Erica, some of the experiences you've had with counseling people with separation anxiety.
I've actually never had to coach someone with separation anxiety. This subject was very new to me until I did like the research. For me, I believe that now I'm a coach, so I wouldn't, if someone has separations and anxiety, I actually would recommend that they talk to like a therapist or a psychologist about that. I think that's a deeper issue that I'm not like really trained for.
Okay.
I would definitely recommend that they talk to a expert, a specialist in that field.
I know as a pastor, you know, people come to you for any and everything. So I've had to counsel people initially, but you're absolutely correct. Initially, I would counsel them and try to help them to sort out their feelings and emotions. But ultimately, I think it wise that people who are experiencing separation anxiety only because there may be the need for medication or there may be the need for deeper, in-depth therapy. That they seek out a medical professional for something like separation anxiety. So, yeah, you're right. That's good.
But I want to chime in on that. When you're helping people, whether you're a life coach or not, the artful skill of listening is very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
What I mean by that is we must be able to listen to what the people are sharing with us without being judgmental, critical, or trying to formulate in your mind what you're going to say while they're talking, because mm-hmm. we could miss something. And like tonight, I feel like all of the callers, they are listening intently. Like they are, their antennas are up. So this topic is really helping a lot of people. And if you have a question or a comment, please press 1 and we will open up your mic. And the reason I say the artful skill is important is once we understand what we heard, and sometimes we need to give back what we think we heard just so that they can confirm that we heard them accurately. And then sometimes people just need that comfort of knowing, okay, Coach Erica was really listening to me. Yeah, Sheila, I felt the compassion in her voice. You know, she was really listening to me too. So I have, you know, I'm not a certified life coach, but I coach people all of the time. And at various times, depending on the situations, God will lead me with what to do or what to say with them. But mm-hmm. while we was talking, Apostle Sheila, when you called on Erica, remember Welcome Back Cotter? That used to come on TV?
Yeah.
Do y'all
yeah.
remember? Yes, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, he say, Arnold Schwarzenegger say, ooh. Because, you know, he had something he wanted to say. So when you called on Erica, I was like, ooh. Because I wanted to share a strategy, all of us, because all of us at one point or another has dealt with some form of anxiety separation. And it is found in Romans, the 8th chapter, beginning at verse 26. And it says, in the same way, the Spirit comes to us, helps us in our weakness. We do not know what prayer to offer or how to offer it as we should, but the Spirit himself knows our need and at the right time intercedes on our behalf with sighs and groanings too deep for words. And he who searches the heart knows what the mind of the Spirit is, because the Spirit intercedes before God on behalf of God's people in accordance with God's will. And we know with great confidence that God, who is deeply concerned about us, causes all things to work together as a plan for good for those who love God, to those who are called according to his plan and purpose, for those whom he foreknew and loved and chose beforehand. He also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son and ultimately share in his complete sanctification, so that he would be the firstborn, the most beloved, honored among many believers and those whom he predestined. He also called, and those whom he called, he also justified. And that means he declared free of the guilt of sin, and those whom he justified, he also glorified, raising them to a heavenly dignity. And the last two verses, what then shall we say to all these things? And we talk about anxiety separation. And right here, it says, what then shall we say to all these things? If God is for us, who can be successful against us? He who did not spare even his own son, but gave up himself for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? So who will bring any charge against us? And in the King James Version, it says, who can separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus? I don't know about y'all, but I'm excited because going back to the opening verse, in the same way the Spirit comes to us and helps us in our weakness. So during those moments of separation and anxiety, please remember that there is nothing that can separate you from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus. People may separate from you. People may walk away from you. People may make you feel like they don't need you. And you know what? When a person can walk out of your life like that, give God the glory and give God the praise, because they doing you a favor. Don't cry. Don't run behind them. Don't beg nobody to be in your life, because God loves you. And God allowed them to walk out of your life for a reason. So whenever you feel like the anxiety of whatever the cause of your separation is causing you to doubt who you are, it's causing you to doubt if God still loves you, go to Romans 8 and just stand on the word of God, because there is nothing that can separate us from the love of God. I'm dealing with some stuff right now. Like, I'm totally at peace with everything with my mom, but how my family is acting, I had to do what this word is saying. Like, the Holy Spirit comes to us and helps us in our weakness. So we don't know what to pray. I'm like, God, I don't know what to pray. So I'm crying, and in the midst of my crying, my tears turn into groans and moans. And somebody need to groan. Somebody need to moan tonight. somebody is feeling the weight of the separation, the weight of the anxiety, and you cannot find the words to articulate how you feel because you have been so shamed, you have been so embarrassed, you have been so humiliated by what happened, but God just wants you to open up your mouth and just groan if you have to groan, moan if you have to moan, because the Holy Spirit is interpreting those moans. And the Holy Spirit is standing in the gap for us to help us in our weaknesses. So it's okay to feel weak. It's okay to feel tired. It's okay to feel discouraged, but you can't stay parked there. So that's when I sing the song, No Parking on a Dance Floor. So I'm done, Apostle Sheila.
You done? You know, I never heard that song before. That's one.
Oh, really?
That's one that,
oh, I love it. I love that song.
That's one that escapes me.
We're going to have to send it to you.
Yeah. But you're absolutely right, Stacy. I appreciate your comments. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
They're so relevant, so relevant. Do we have any callers?
Let me take a look. Our callers, y'all kind of quiet tonight. That means you are listening. But if you have something to say, we want to hear from you.
Yes. Because this subject, like I said, 1 in 10.
We have a caller.
Okay.
10%
of people are affected by this.
Caller with the last four numbers 0919. Welcome to the Eloquently Speaking Talk Show.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
I have been pressing my one for a minute.
Oh, really?
Hey, see, thank you. Because I looked once and I had my phone muted, so I'm like, wait, Annie, that's why. But I wanted to. Thank you all for being so transparent. And I know that I'm being helped by this, by your topics. It's cutting me. It's helping me. There are some things where there's some times when I say, you know, I don't want to address that right now. But thank you all for being so transparent. And I know it's helping other people as well. So don't really get discouraged if no one says anything. Just know that just like it's helping me, I believe it's helping other people, and thank you all so much.
You're welcome. And caller with the last four numbers, 8843, welcome to the Eloquently Speaking Talk Show.
Hi, Stacy.
Hi, Mike. How you doing? Yes, we can hear you.
Doing okay for the most part.
That's good. So what did you want to share with us tonight?
Well, I mean, I just didn't get to listen to the beginning of the broadcast, but, you know, when you're talking about separation anxiety, I think back to when my first wife took our two kids back to Ohio along with her boyfriend. And that was very hard for me because she had emotionally abused me so much that I could not bring myself to follow her back there as badly as I wanted to. So I only got to see my children for 2 months during the summer. It was hard on me. I don't know or remember how hard it was on them because of how she would talk to me, talk to them. You know, I don't know what was going through their minds. I'm sure there was some probably anger on their part that was not through anything I did. But, you know, I didn't know how to handle things back then because I had nobody to help me. So it was tough.
So how did you get through it? What did you do?
I talked back then. There was no free long distance, so I couldn't talk to him as much as I would have liked to. So I just looked forward to when I could talk to him, and then when I could drive back to Ohio and pick my children up and bring them out here. That was, because what was bad for me was I went from one abusive relationship to another. And my second wife didn't exactly make it easy either, because she had anger issues back then. So I just focused on pretty much from what I remember on when I'm going to see him the next time or talk to him. That kind of helped me get through things. I did have faith in God and all that, that the Lord was going to work everything out somehow. And he did. Unfortunately, I'm not close to my oldest children right now. One of them doesn't talk to me, and the other one, I hear from him once in a while, because he's got a busy life. So, it's something I had to kind of get used to, I guess.
That's powerful. Ladies, anybody want to respond to what he's saying, Apostle Sheila?
It wasn't easy, I had no choice.
It sounds like accepting the issue and finding your own sense of peace in the midst of what you were going through was the best option for you. And also you said, you trusted God that it would work out. Sometimes we don't have all the answers because, we have no control over the other people that are involved in the scenario. Finding your own peace, finding your own sense of resolve in the midst of the situation can be the best option for you.
Exactly.
I
don't want to get into a massive amount of detail because there's not enough time for that, really.
Thank you for sharing. Thank you for being transparent and your ability to just hold on in the midst of what you were going through. There had to be a strength that rose up in you to overcome, the situation, to overcome your own personal feelings and not get caught in your disappointment, your heartbreak. Stacy had talked about earlier, the loss of a relationship that she was in. It broke her heart, and it is heartbreaking. The end of any relationship is heartbreaking.
It is.
So the strength and the resolve that you had to overcome your own personal feelings and think about your children, that took a lot, I can imagine.
My faith in God is probably what kept me going at that time. Because I could have easily have just given up all hope back then, especially after what I went through with my ex. But I held on, and, I got to see my children grow up and graduate from high school, and even though I didn't get to spend, as much time around them as I would have liked to.
Right. Erica, would you like to respond to the caller?
Yes. Thank you so much for sharing. And, sometimes I believe we go through certain things to bring out the strength that's already in us that we believe we don't have. So God allows us to go through certain situations to give you the wisdom and the strength for either next time something arises so you can look back and say, I made it through this. This is what I need to do to get through this stressful time because this is what happened last time. And so you can remember back. So that's like wisdom and strength together, to know that you have the strength to deal with what you dealt with and to be able to keep going and work through it and come to the other side and look back. And we also use that wisdom and that strength that we gain from certain situations that God brings out of us through those situations. Now we have that to help someone else. And that's what you're doing now by sharing your story and your message, is that whoever's listening, I'm sure, has gone through what you've gone through. And now you have passed that wisdom and strength on to them as to say, I made it through this, and I know you can make it through it too, you know, through this, you know, whatever you're going through too. So thank you again, definitely, for sharing your story. That means a lot to those who are listening, as well as us on the show. So we appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. I mean, what I'm doing now at the church that I go to is, you know, I have created different pictures that I've posted on Facebook and things like that, of things to encourage the youth at the church I'm at. And, you know, I've handed out things to them, you know, like declarations for them to read out loud to themselves when they're feeling insecure or something's not going right at home or whatever. And I think it's helped them.
Oh, I'm sure it has. And even if children don't, you know, a lot of times teenagers don't, you know, they want to act tough and they don't want to act like something is helping them or benefiting them, or that, you know, the adults are right, because they look at us like we're crazy. Half the time, you know, we're not, you know, we don't keep up on the times. We don't know what's going on. But teenagers, and I can speak from this point of view, because I was a teenager. And, you know, a lot of things that, you know, I didn't think were relevant or important at that time, I realized as I got older that my mother actually didn't know what she was talking about, you know, and my teachers didn't know what they were talking about. You know, I just was, you know, we teenagers are rebellious. So everything that you're teaching them and showing them how to do is helping them. They are benefiting from. So just keep doing what you're doing, and you will hear the stories later on, and they'll be, when they get adult, you know, become adults and they have their families and stuff, they won't come back to you and say thank you for what you did for me as a result.
Right. Yeah, I've even given a couple of them a copy of my book too, so just to show them that they are who God says they are, not who their peers say they are.
Amen. Well, thank you so much, caller. Thank you for sharing. We're down to our last few minutes for our session together tonight. And we've had such an insightful roundtable, such prolific information that was shared and relevant, not only to us as hosts and coaches and pastors and ministers as we are, but for the audience to take away and to use as tools in their own life experiences. So I want to give Erica and Stacy time to for a short recap, and then we're going to close out the show for tonight. Erica?
Yes, ma'am. I would just like to say thank you so much to everyone who is listening to the show. I hope we were able to provide you with tools and information and just a sense of, you know, comfort, knowing that, you know, we too have been through some things. And, you know, we made it through to the other side, and that you too can make it through to the other side, and know that you're never alone. And just to seek help, you know, when you need it. There's nothing wrong with that. Seek professional help for separation anxiety, among any other anxiety that you are enduring at this time. And really quickly, I just want to say that, you know, congratulations to Stacy. Stacy will be a guest speaker at an event that's coming up this Sunday on August 13th at, it looks like, 11 a.m., I'm correct, and you can attend the event meeting Zoom. So just watch out for social media posts, and we'll try to post something on there, and you can do it via Zoom. So thanks for listening again, and congratulations, Stace, on your speaking engagement. I'm a tune
yeah,
in.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, Stacy is actually speaking at the Women's Day at my cousin's church.
Oh,
and
wow.
So I'm excited for both of them, meeting and forming a friendship, and, of course, for Stacy in this opportunity, even in the midst of what she's experiencing. But you know what? I found that as we lean on trust in the Lord with all our heart and lean not to our own understanding, he will direct you through this, and the word that's going to come out is going to be powerful because it's been pressed in the olive press.
Mm.
So I pray that God would use you in a mighty way. I pray for those who are coming to the service that they might come with an ear to hear what thus saith the Lord.
Amen. Thank you both. You caught me off guard, Erica, with that. Thank you so much.
I knew I was.
And,
that's why I did it.
And this is how it feels to be on the other side, right? I want to thank everyone that tuned in tonight, because this ended up going in a different direction than I thought it was, and it's been absolutely delicious. And it's always good to hear from a man, and especially a man that has been separated from his children, because we think we know. But when we hear that testimony, when we hear the strength and even the pain of what it was like and what it is, like, God is real and God is good. So thank you so much, Mike, for sharing your story with us. And so my closing remarks with separation, and especially anxiety separation, we all are in a wonderful season of answer prayer. And there is a certain level of separation that's going to take place whether we're ready for it or not. And in Isaiah 43, verse 18 and 19, it says, "Remember ye not the former things, neither consider the things of old." And I'm going to pause right there. Some of you are holding on to old stuff, and God is saying, let it go. Whatever anxiety you think you want to embrace by letting it go, whatever separation anxiety, I got something better for you. So he's saying, behold, I will do a new thing. Now it shall spring forth. Shall ye not know it? I will even make a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. So God is aware of our anxiety. He's aware of the separation issues that we go through, even with letting go of the past. And I'm not talking about anything that has, you know, gone wrong. There's no trauma. There's no bad relationship. But it's simply with letting go of that place that you are in right now, because you have outgrown it. It no longer fits you. God is calling you to come up higher. God is saying, enlarge your tent, because I want to increase you. But as long as you're afraid of the unknown, as long as you're stuck and you don't want to stop remembering the former things, then that's all you're going to have. And when God comes, you're going to miss your boat because you've been, you know, controlled by those former things. Let go of the former things. Feel the anxiety. Feel the fear and do it anyhow. And remember that nothing can separate you from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus. If you do feel anxiety, if you do feel pain from separation, speak to it and say, I feel your pain. You are hurting me right now, but you cannot stay parked here. And thank you so much. This was a good show.
Thanks, Stacy. Thanks again for the opportunity to host on tonight to facilitate this conversation about separation anxiety. Again, it's been impactful, insightful, and very relevant. And I thank all of the listeners who've taken the time to listen in. We will be back again with you next Friday night on the Eloquently Speaking Radio Show. Thank you and good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone. God bless.